This is the Friday, January 11th, 2019 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Darren Newsome. Darren, welcome back.
Thank you, Delaney.
Darren, we're going to have a lot of interesting conversations in this Market Plus episode. I want to start out here talking about the cotton markets, because you had an interesting idea that perhaps the industrial hemp market is causing a ruckus in the cotton market.
Yeah, we're seeing, you know, right now we've just got the cotton market, particularly if we look off at the December 2019 contract, new crop contract, it's just collapsing right now. It lost ground again this past week. And it's not just fun selling in this. We've also got spreads getting weaker. We've got spreads showing a more bearish situation. So it's indicating there's a dramatic change, or there appears to be a drastic change in the fundamentals of this market, and it certainly seems to be coming from this industrial hemp craze. You know, it's part of the farm bill, if I recall, and the talk is now, even though we have already slowed demand for U.S. cotton, now we're going to threaten the domestic demand and other parts of the demand by introducing a competing product. So, you know, this has cotton on the defensive. It's in a contra-seasonal sell-off right now. It should be going up. It's going down. Has no friends. It's kind of taking the place of where wheat usually is, when you can say it has no friends. I just don't see it stopping anytime soon unless something changes, unless acreage talks change, weather change, something happens.
If we get a trade deal with China, is that enough to change the... Okay.
Number one, we're not going to immediately get a trade deal with China. We're not going to get our tariff situation with India taken care of. None of these things are going to happen, I don't think, in time for spring planting. And so there could be something out there that lifts cotton, but I don't think it's going to come from that avenue.
Okay, let's talk about planting intentions. We've got a question here from Brian in Illinois. He said, what are your thoughts on planting intentions? Do you think beans will hold their own, or will corn totally steal the show?
My thoughts on the planting intentions report is I hope USDA is still shut down, because it's a completely unnecessary, irrelevant report.
Get a couple more jabs in there.
A couple more jabs. That's not what the question's asking. What I'm hearing as I make the way around, and you're probably hearing much the same thing as you make your way around the country, is, you know, all of the pundits were talking about how we were going to see a 4 to 5 million acre switch to, we were going to see more corn, we were going to see less beans, we were going to see more cotton, you know, the possibility that we could see some canola, we talked about it in the show. By and large, we are going to see some small adjustments in the acres, but when we compare corn and soybeans, they were both at that 89, 90 million acre mark in 2018, I would guess that we're going to come in about 50-50 again. We may see a little more corn, maybe a little less beans, but I don't think it's going to be as dramatic a shift as what we were talking about. Now, when will we know this? We won't. Hopefully, we never will. Hopefully, we'll just have market signals as to what it believes is bullish or bearish, and we don't have to worry about these silly numbers all the time and you know, argue about these numbers starting at the end of March. Most likely, at some point, we're going to start seeing reports again, and we're going to start getting acreage guesses. My thought is we're not going to see the huge shift that we were talking about maybe 3 to 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing across the country, too. I want to throw one more question in there that we kind of talked about a little bit here before we started recording. Let's say 10, 20 years out in the future, do you see countries like South America, Brazil, Argentina coming in and being the main drivers of crops like soybeans and corn, and instead switching some of those more traditional states like the I states into crops like canola, cotton, industrial hemp?
10, 20 years down the road, I think there's a possibility. I think we could readjust the growing patterns, you know, worldwide. Will the U.S. ever give up on corn? Unlikely. We could see lose some interest in soybeans. Let's say we never get another trade deal. Let's say we stay at a constant trade war with China. We could lose some interest in soybeans. Wheat, I can see why people lose interest in wheat. So I think, and from what I'm hearing, is that people are willing to try different crops, alternative crops. 10, 20 years down the road, that could just be more, that could be more of a custom thing than an oddity.
I think it's going to be interesting to see.
It will be.
Hopefully in our lifetime we get to see that.
The analysts who are still working at that point will have a lot of fun talking about it. I'm not planning on it.
Okay, well, let's talk about South American weather here. We've got a question from Philip in Dresden, Ontario, talking about South American weather in particular. He said, it's hot and dry in Brazil, but still mountains of soybeans in the western Midwest. Are there butterflies fluttering we can't see? And if so, what is the future of soybean prices in 2019?
I really enjoy Philip's questions because he always ties it back to chaos theory, the butterfly effect, and so on. We do supposedly, or not we, but South America supposedly, particularly Brazil, has problems with its crop. We talked about how estimates are being lowered from the 120 million plus down to, I think, like 116 to 118 million metric tons. That is noticeable, and it should be getting the market's attention. But what's more important here? The fact that that's what all the talk is about, or the fact that the market's not reacting to it at all. To me, the important thing is that the market's not reacting. So what this says is, okay, maybe we're losing some production here. But yes, we still have mountains of soybeans all over the United States. We still have no trade deal. We have trade talks that are going nowhere. And it's possible China's demand, again, isn't as strong because of some of the other problems that it's having. So, you know, we don't know all the whys. We don't know all of the whys that are out there, but we can see the what. And the what is, market still isn't concerned about anything tightening up, even if we are seeing the possibility of larger crops reduced. That's a terrible way of saying it, but the crops reduced in Brazil.
But does it really matter if we're not going to hit a billion bushel carryover anyways?
Market's saying it doesn't matter at all. You know, let's go back to the discussion we had where the U.S. ending stocks are really only about 560 to 600 million bushels. That's still too many. And if Brazil's production isn't as large, well, the market should be getting excited, and it's not. If we look out at the new crop spreads, they're not as bearish right now. In fact, some of them are leaning towards the bullish side. I would say, you know, that could get people excited, except for one problem. That's normally the case this time of year because it's just so far out there. So until we actually see the market starting to get interested in this, I see no reason to get overly excited about it.
Darren, you keep saying 500 to 600 million bushels of soybeans. What do we need to see to have some strength or be at a level where supply and demand are closer together?
Okay, what we need to see is those spreads, the forward curve of the soybean market. We need to see the carry in those spreads start to weaken a little bit.
Okay.
Right now we're covering 70% plus of full commercial carry. If we can get that down below 65, 66%, start lowering it, getting it into the lower 60s, maybe upper 50% of full commercial carry, then something's going on. We can also watch basis. Right now, we're still running below the weakest that we've been over the last 5 years. We're seeing some seasonal strength because everybody's shut their bin doors. But overall, we've got to see those things happen. There won't be any actual change in the market until we see spreads and basis react.
Okay, let's switch things up here a little bit and talk about the feeder cattle markets. I know you said earlier in the show you haven't had time to look at the charts, so answer this the best you can. I'm sure you will. We've got LH in South Dakota saying his particular operation, they background 450-pound calves to 1,000-pound calves. We did protect on the board, but that does not guarantee a profit. So what's your thoughts on feeder cattle prices for next June?
I think we could, if we start going out to the summer, part of me just, I guess, wants to naturally be bearish the feeder cattle market. As we head off into the summer, that's usually one of the stronger times for the grain markets. It pushes that higher, and usually you see an inverse relationship.
Why be bearish then?
Because I can't help it. but right now, if we look at the way the situation is right now, I'm going to say I think we could still, sometime between, say, here in, you know, midwinter through, say, mid-spring, I think we're still going to see the market move up a little bit. Can it hold all the way through June? Most likely not. I think the market will come down by then. But I think we're going to have some opportunities to get some sales, get some hedges on books.
Okay. When should we be looking to put those hedges on the books?
Probably, again, sometime between now and mid-spring.
Okay.
Keeping a close eye on the summer contracts.
All right. Let's take one more question here, which might lead into further discussion. Mm-hmm. We've got Roger, at Roger Cooper 62 on Twitter. Why has GM and Ford quit making flex-fuel 8-cylinder or cycle engines for SUVs and pickups starting in 2015, and how does that help or hurt future ethanol production?
Roger, that's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to why they would be ending, unless it has to do more with the 8-cylinder than the flex-fuel. I don't know. I know there's a lot going on in the energy markets right now. You know, if we're looking at crude oil, if we're looking at ethanol, and if we're looking at gasoline, all these things going together, I'm not sure why GM and Ford and so on would be cutting back on those productions at this point.
How does it hurt then, to answer his second question, how does that hurt future ethanol production?
If they're just, say, cutting back on their 8-cylinders, but yet they're going to, you know, downsize the engine size, probably not much at all, because I think we're going to see ethanol demand going down anyway as fuel consumption, but mileage for these vehicles continues to go higher. And a lot of this seems to be geared towards that, getting towards more fuel efficient, there's the word I was looking for, vehicles. That's going to start to slow demand for ethanol. Do I see this big push for electronic vehicles? Someday, maybe that 10 to 20 years that you were talking about earlier. But for right now, I think this, if anything, this is more of a move just towards more fuel efficiency. And yes, that could slow ethanol demand a bit.
Okay, Darren, final thing you made sure to mention that we wanted to talk about in Market Plus was crude oil and heating oil has kind of been in flux here since the end of December. Mm-hmm. Why do producers need to care about that, or people watching Market to Market?
At the end of December, we saw heating oil, distillates, whatever you want to call it. We saw crude oil come down and start to bounce up at the end of December. Distillates, or heating oil, diesel fuel and jet fuel and all those things, came down to long-term support at about 165. Now, farmers usually are looking to cover some of their expenses at the end of the year. This was their opportunity to cover all of their diesel fuel needs for 2019, getting it locked in at what's seasonally a good time of year to do it. Now, we've rallied about 25 cents since late December. It pulled back a couple cents, I think, on Friday. But by and large, it looks like the market may want to go up. It looks like we're seeing some sort of shift in the energy complex as a whole. Crude oil may want to go up. If so, look for heating oil and distillates to go up. Look for RBOB gasoline to go up as well. We could be looking at some higher energy prices here over the next couple of months.
So definitely, if you haven't locked in fuel needs yet, now would probably be the time to do it rather than later.
I still think now is a good time. Like I said, it's rallied 25 cents off of its low, off of its spike low. You know, you get a little bit of a pullback. Maybe they think it was overdone a little bit. But yeah, I would certainly be looking in here to get my 2019 needs covered.
All right. Darren Newsom, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Delaney.
Join us again next week when we'll look at expanding East Coast oyster farms looking to rake up new markets in the Midwest, and Elaine Cubb will join me at the Market to Market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.